again, you know, I relearned something I knew, you know, intellectually. And that is that part of the role of leaders is to hold the anxiety for the community so that the community can go about the work.
Welcome to Danforth Dialogues, lessons from the front lines of the COVID-19 pandemic with Morehouse School of Medicine President and CEO, Dr. Valerie Montgomery Rice. In today's episode, Dr. Montgomery Rice sits down with her fellow Atlanta University presidents, Dr. George T. French Jr. of Clark Atlanta University, Dr. Mary Schmidt Campbell of Spelman College, and Dr. David A. Thomas of Morehouse College. Atlanta University Center is the oldest and largest contiguous consortium of African American higher education institutions in the United States, each of which were significantly impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. You'll get to hear the intimate details from each of these remarkable university leaders from their conversation within Danforth Chapel today. They talk about some of the hardest decisions they had to make during the pandemic, challenges like the mental health crisis they will still face on the road ahead, how they came together as a close-knit community of leaders amid these challenges, and how they're continuing to persevere to move the needle for historically Black colleges and university systems and the stakeholder communities they serve. We hope you enjoy this inspiring episode of Danforth Dialogues. And now over to Dr. Montgomery Rice within Danforth Chapel.
Welcome to Danforth Dialogues. Each month, we bring you leadership insights from a wide range of guests. Today, we will continue our focus on insights gleaned as we and others face the most challenging global health crisis in a century, the COVID-19 pandemic. Morehouse School of Medicine is part of the historic Atlanta University Center, the nation's largest consortium of historically Black African-American colleges and universities. And as we bring you these leadership insights from a wide range of guests, we also are excited about the fact that we get to lean in on important topics. Sometimes we'll think about things that are happening right now in the environment, and sometimes we'll talk about other leadership insights that we hope will help you no matter what your profession. Today, we're proud to bring you this broadcast from the historic Danforth Chapel on the Morehouse College campus. As you may know, Morehouse College is the alma mater of a number of African-American men who have had a significant impact in our country, from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Samuel L. Jackson, and of course, the founder of the Morehouse School of Medicine and former Secretary of Health and Human Services, Dr. Louis W. Sullivan. A little bit about this chapel, though, because this is number two or number three of our podcast. And so for those who don't know, this chapel was built in 1955 with a grant from William Danforth, the former president of the Ralston Purina Company. The chapel is most famous for serving as impromptu lectures and a lecture hall for the legendary Morehouse College president, Dr. Benjamin Mays, who would gather students in the chapel to hear life lessons that helped to shape their lives. It was those lectures and those times that inspired us to rename and to name the podcast Danforth Dialogues and host them from this chapel. Today, I am honored to be joined by several of my fellow AUC presidents, Dr. George French Jr., Clark Atlanta University, Dr. David A. Thomas, Morehouse College, and Dr. Mary Smith Campbell of Spelman College. Thank you all for joining me for this edition of Danforth Dialogues.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
After two difficult years, it appears that the COVID-19 virus is becoming more of an endemic, and it looks like we're finally starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel, including those who have been infected with the disease and those who have been vaccinated. According to the CDC, more than 50% of Americans should now be producing the COVID-19 antibodies, either from a previous infection or because they got the vaccine. So today we are going to talk about leadership beyond the pandemic, challenges and opportunities. But before we delve into the topic, I think it would be good to ask each of you where your institutions are today regarding the pandemic that is transitioning to an endemic. Are things back to normal? Are there any residual issues facing your schools? And Mary, if I may, since you will be retiring soon as Spelman's president, I think it's appropriate that we start with you.
Thank you, Valerie, and thank you for gathering us together today. I was thinking about that and thinking about what a great job we all did in responding from a medical perspective to the pandemic. We all had a unified set of protocols and practices, and we put them into place. We had great compliance from our community, and we kept our infection rates low. And we declared success. But in point of fact, something very profound had happened to our students and to our workforce. And it certainly took Spelman some time to understand the depth of the change. And that was, we had had a community of people who had been in isolation. They had suffered incredible loss. Almost everybody we know has lost somebody. We lost some of our fellow workers at Spelman to COVID. People lost parents, brothers, sisters. They were grieving. We know that the social isolation had an enormous impact on our young people. These are their developmental years. These are when they are forging those foundational relationships with each other and with their faculty. And in the first semester, I think if we had to do it again in fall of 2021, we would have paid a lot more attention to rebuilding the social infrastructure, the public culture that really weaves our community together and really guides our young people from their teenage years into adulthood. And so that's principally what we've learned. So our spring semester was 100%, I think, more dynamic and impactful for our students. We learned something, and we took those lessons and put them into practice.
And David, I would ask you something very similar. Are things back to normal on this historic campus?
Yeah, I also think we've learned some things about operating more efficiently. The other side of it is, I think my students have become much more conscious of taking care of each other. The downside of why, though, is what is a learning that's come to me, and that is the intensity around mental health challenges is much more palpable in our community than it was in the spring of 2019. And the conversations that faculty, students, and staff have about it. The number of my students, our SGA, my student government, I meet with them every month. And a theme in every conversation has something to do with the mental health of their colleagues. They've in action to have mental health days, asked us to do some things with our scheduling to create mental health breaks. And we've responded. The last thing I'll say that, you know, also keeps us from being back to normal is a challenge, which is many of our students, our freshmen in particular, lost a year. And in many of the schools that they come from, that senior year is critical because, you know, many of them go to schools that sort. And it's kind of junior and senior year, they decide who the kids are, we're going to prepare for college. And if you miss that senior year, you often miss some very basic skills. Like that's where they intensify the writing programs, except, you know, a number of things. And so, you know, we've had to think about how do we continue to provide our students with rigorous education, but also deal with the realities that many of them are ramping up from a place that usually they're already beyond when they get here.
Thank you, thank you. And George, Clark Atlanta University, the largest of the four institutions, male, female, in the sense that we see the co-ed exchange. Now, Spelman and Morehouse have some co-ed exchange too. It's just not official, but we know it's official on your campus.
Yes.
What have you seen? What have you seen?
Well, interesting. And first of all, let me also thank you for having us today. I'm honored to be among such esteemed colleagues. And as you noted, Mary going first and answering the question, this has been a great colleague with which to work. All of you have. I also want to take note that the Morehouse School of Medicine had such a huge impact in informing the decisions of this council. But this council demonstrated collegiality, depth of thought, passion for our students, faculty, and staff to come to this point to have such low positivity rates. I think it's, and then when we get to the point of analyses, what is the positivity rate here at the AUC versus in Vine City? And how can we share with our community that we are operating in science? And there will be another pandemic or endemic. There will be something else where the community, we need them to look to us. And I think that even in Atlanta, I think we could have gotten ahead of the African-American community. A lot of public service announcements were made by a lot of entities, hospitals. But the AUC coming to where this, actually, it would be Morehouse School of Medicine, and we support Morehouse School of Medicine because you all would be the official lead in that. So I think we get ready for what's going to be the new normal. And for me, the new normal is, as my colleague said, we've been talking for years about mobilizing, transitioning, getting a strong online program, yet we found that we did online programs for 4,000 students within 2 weeks, but we can't get it done otherwise. So I really don't want to go back to having 4,000 on campus. My question now in enrollment management meetings would be, so we should have at least 2,000 online, right? We had 4,000 recently. Why don't we deliberately market, find those students who have come to Clark Atlanta University, some of whom could not return for whatever reason, even from the West Coast. So we have to determine how we can help them to finish their courses in an online capacity. So new normal, we're trying to figure out what that is.
So I want to touch on something, guys, that I think is very critical. And Mary, you alluded to it. David, you pointed it out. And I know, George, in our conversations, this has been a challenge for all of us. And this mental health and wellness for our students. So one of my thoughts in leadership is that in the midst of crises, leaders look to learn, not just mitigate. We've learned a lot. And based on what we are seeing in this mental health and wellness space, we're not going to just be able to mitigate, right, the challenges and needs of our students. We have to actually respond and not just react. George, I'll start with you. How do we do that? How do we as leaders respond to the clear needs that our students have in mental health and wellness as a result of directly from this pandemic and also based on the other factors that came with the pandemic? How do we respond versus just reacting?
So I think, and I really enjoy your quote. I have one very similar that is apropos by Eric Hoffer. He said, in times of great change, learners inherit the earth, while the learned inherit a world which no longer exists. Mm. So we have to be learners right now, and we have to learn. I think that the key is we have to learn from the individuals who are most impacted. Mm-hmm. We have to make sure that we are talking to the students. We might have to make sure that we're providing exponentially more health services than we had before. And then we have to make sure to expand it
to staff and faculty. Mm-hmm. Faculty and staff who've been in homes, locked up, not able to socialize, they need some assistance also. And mm-hmm. But it has to be framed as within the African-American community. To go to a psychologist, a psychiatrist, it's taboo. Yet in other communities, students that go to school with our children, they go 2 times a week mm-hmm. to see therapists. And it's fine, but it's taboo. So we're going to have to make sure that our communities know that it's okay. We have services for faculty, staff, and students. And then just sit there, however, disaggregate those numbers and ask the students, what is it that you need? How are you feeling? So we can know with specificity what types of services they need. Sometimes we act like it's monolithic. We have a counselor. We might need some specialized counseling.
Right. And David, you talked about utilizing technology. There are so many apps now that are available for mental health and wellness. How do we incorporate those into our Atlanta University Student Health Wellness Center that we have on Lee Street, such that students can get opportunities for chat therapy, that they can go into group therapies, that they can really have a sort of a menu of opportunities to address their mental health and wellness. David?
Yeah, let me offer a different perspective on this. Something I relearned.
Okay.
And that is the notion of self-therapeutic community. Mm-hmm. And how do you create self-therapeutic community? And by that, I mean, teaching our students and supporting our students in activities that help them to manage the stresses that are on them. And I'll give you a good example. Before the pandemic, we offered yoga classes. Nobody went but a few of the staff, right? So.
And this is all-male school.
This is all-male school.
This is all-male school. So we are progressive.
As all-male school, we were offering yoga classes before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Guys didn't go. They asked to have yoga. And I walked in one day, and there were like 35 young men doing a yoga practice, and yoga is self-therapeutic.
That's right.
And creating a community of men that make doing that comfortable to them, right, is about creating a self-therapeutic community. And so, one of the things that we're doing at Morehouse, we got a grant to have a group come in that focus on mental health on campuses to do an assessment of our environment to help us begin to think about how we become a more of a self-therapeutic environment mm-hmm. as well. Because, in many ways, when a student is in crisis, right, and they need mental health, you're actually already behind the eight ball.
Right.
And reinforcing our students being comfortable coming to us, telling us somebody needs help. Mm-hmm. We actually had a few students who might have harmed themselves, mm-hmm. but for the fact that their brothers came mm-hmm. and said,
mm-hmm.
he needs help. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things I'm thinking about.
Yeah. So I fully endorse that whole concept of the self-therapeutic. And what happened, and again, I will be very honest, a lot of this happened spontaneously without the administration stepping in and saying, we're going to do this or we're going to do that. A victory garden was restored on campus. Now, we've had a garden at Spelman since 1881, mm-hmm. and sometimes it was left untended, a little raggedy. It has come back to life. You can walk over there and you will see scores of students tending the garden, going to the harvest. We have an innovation lab, which we've had now for about 6 years. It's about big as a shoebox when it started. But now it's a real space. And students will say, this made my life possible here because I could walk in. I didn't have to be invited. I didn't have to take a course. I could just come and find my space and my people. Yoga on the Oval has gotten to be a big thing, But creating opportunities around the campus where students or faculty or staff can come forward themselves, giving themselves agency, feels like they have more power and control over a life that had had that control wrested from them.
Right. Yeah. George, you wanted to make a comment.
I was just going to say, I'm looking forward to Dave becoming chair of the Council of Presidents. One thing that I really think I love to suggest we incorporate, we have things going on our campuses right next door that are just phenomenally brilliant. I mean, the approach that you're taking with the outside assessment overall and the whole yoga on the oval, those ideas are ideas I think we all have ideas, but we don't really exchange them enough.
And I think this is a reflection, guys, of leaders looking to learn and not just mitigate. And as you were describing, David, these 35 young men sitting in this chair doing chair yoga, I am reminded of something that you said early on, and you've said it often, that you can go into the cafeteria at Morehouse College, and that is one place in the country that you will see over sometimes 1,000 African-American men or men of color going about the business of doing their business, and how we can't take that for granted with everything that has been going on in this country, because also during the pandemic of the COVID-19 virus, we were also dealing with a pandemic of chronic social injustice, racial unrest. And I want to make sure that we recognize that and acknowledge it in our conversation, and also ask the question, what leadership skill did you have to pull up front in order to balance both of those pandemics, in order to be who you needed to be for your students, for your faculty, for the staff, for the community, and for your family?
So Valerie, even in 2019, CAU and Spelman had students who were shot, as you know.
Exactly.
During the racial reckoning, Morehouse and Spelman had students who were the victims of assault by the police during that time. Spelman had 3 bomb threats. Clark Atlanta had an active shooter threat. Morehouse had a bomb threat, 2 bomb threats. So the pressures on our community over and beyond the pandemic were real and ever present. One of the things that I came as a surprise to me, but also I came to welcome, was the sense that as a leader, I also sometimes have to be a pastoral figure. I have to be a symbolic figure. I have to be a figure of consolation and care. And there was a moment there when I was doing a town hall almost every other week to reach out. And I looked at it as if I were performing those pastoral duties. They were very real because our community was in a state of trauma. I called forth my dean of chapel. That was very real for her to have a presence and to invite us to understand that the spiritual side is part of our ability to, part of our good health and our ability to continue to learn and be a community of learners.
David?
What Mary said so eloquently resonates for me. You know, I naturally resist the idea that I have to be an inspirational leader. But in this moment, what Mary described as sort of the pastoral aspect became very live. You know, I also learned, again, you know, I relearned something I knew, you know, intellectually. And that is that part of the role of leaders is to hold the anxiety for the community so that the community can go about the work. Right? And I became very conscious of that as part of my role. And part of that was speaking to the anxiety, right? Not denying it, right? That it was real, but also speaking to the work that still had to be done, calling forth, if you will, the DNA that's in Morehouse. So I remember I said to my students, let's remember this is our time. Morehouse is made for this moment. Right? And parents were on those Zooms and they sent me notes. You know, so many of my students went out and got involved in the community while they were home during the pandemic. Because this was our time.
This is our time. Right, right. George?
So before I arrived in Atlanta, my mom called and she said that I was going to have to engage my pastoral gifts before administrative gifts. When I arrived at Clark Atlanta University, I really didn't know that she knew what she was talking about. But I did. I had to engage those gifts, which endeared me to my students. And they became more of a dependency immediately. Sooner than it would have taken me to gain the trust of the community. So for that family to ask me to eulogize my student, there was an embracing. And after that, it was that I was going to incrementally approach Clark Atlanta University for change because they were not just in posture for drastic change. When COVID hit and we had to go online, I had to invoke transformational leadership. We don't have time for increments. So it was a combination of those two. Last thing I would say about that is during that time when we talk about the mental needs, everyone on the stage, we would go to the grocery store, our husbands, our wives, we buy everything we wanted, everything we thought we might need if we were in the house for 6 months. And that's a comfortable feeling, but there are other people in our community that did not have the money to go to the grocery store and buy anything. And in their thoughts, once they were able to get this money, if they got paid on next Friday, all the food would be gone. That's a horrible condition and emotional. And I think we need to find some kind of way, not just to help our campuses, but help what's going on in the community with their crisis.
And so George, I think that one of the things I think we all did a great job on during the pandemic was, first of all, serving as an anchor for one another. We also recognized the value of communication. So, you know, as an Atlanta University Center President Consortium, we used to get together, what, once a quarter, then it was maybe once a month. And then during this pandemic, we've gotten together every week. And so we may not get together every week, but I think we all found value. We responded instead of reacting. And the reason I say we responded because we pulled in those other leaders in our organization to bring their expertise to the table, think through solutions, and then present them to us. We had thoughtful conversations that went back and forth about what we're going to do. We sent each other our press releases. We shared all of these things because we wanted this community of learners, of parents, of community engaged, people who care about this community to hear one voice. And I think we were very successful with that. And so I have to congratulate us on that. And remember something that David said. We were holding the anxiety of the community in the palm of our hands. So let's talk about some opportunities as we begin to come to a close. George, you brought up that we need to do more. We know that we were benefactors of the CARES Act dollars that we have leveraged to support our students to engage in building a technologically advanced institution. We've now had the benefit of being able to use some of those dollars for even capital projects that will extend their impact. And And what do we need to do more such that the community also benefits from whatever we benefited from? What do we need to do more?
So I would say a couple of things. First of all, if you were to ask me pre-COVID, what would be the resources that I would need to really enhance my online capacity for the institution, I would give you X number of millions of dollars. And I would say absolutely that we have those funds now based on what we were able to do with CARES Act. And I was deeply involved in that process, for which I'm very proud. And I say that not self-aggrandizement, but to make sure that my colleagues understand all of the ways, I'm talking about colleagues nationwide,
right,
that they can utilize those funds. So if we can expand the technological base of Clark Atlanta University and the AU Center, how can we expand that wireless capacity to our community? Because right now we have children, school children, two blocks away that can only get on the internet as long as the library, the public library, is open. So their colleagues on the other side of town who they have wireless in the home, they have an advantage that we can help them with. So we'll expand our technology as much as we can to touch our community directly.
David, what about Morehouse College? What do you see as an opportunity coming out of this pandemic that may be a benefit to your immediate community, the AUCC, or the community at large?
You know, in this moment of the pandemic, the two pandemics, the COVID pandemic, pandemic of what I call racial reckoning, I think that there is a way in which what's been recognized is the moral authority of our institutions to speak to issues relevant to our community and relevant to the world at large. And in my view, I'll just speak for Morehouse, I think we have not used our moral authority. That's an observation I had when I got here. You just take, for example, when they were doing the My Brother's Keeper's effort, you never saw a Morehouse byline. That was about Black men. How could you have a national movement in this country about Black men?
That's right.
And not have Morehouse's voice at the center of it. Mm-hmm. I think the fact that Morehouse School of Medicine and you personally, Valerie, were so connected to the COVID moment, the vaccines, able to talk authoritatively about the fact that Black people were in these clinical trials. Part of why they were in these clinical trials was that there were people like you out there, right? That gave a voice of moral authority to speak to the community. And, you know, we've got some things happening here now with our data analytics effort and institute. Mm-hmm. And, you know, bringing to that effort, answering the big questions that have to do with our community and leveraging our moral authority, I think is a huge opportunity and gift that we could give to the world in bigger ways than at least Morehouse has been giving it.
So I kind of hear what you're saying, speaking for ourselves instead of others speaking on our behalf.
Hear, hear.
And we are our own authorities, and we can generate those conversations that will be evidence-based because we have the lived experiences. Yeah.
So I'll just give you, you know, one thing that we just got a C grant and have created something called the Black Male Research Institute.
That's right.
And, you know, our first program in it is around something called Black Masculinities, which is about speaking the voice of how Black men show up in the world and understanding it and what shapes it internally and externally. And we're going to add to that a policy piece. And it's one of the centers of excellence that's going to be at the center of our capital campaign.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mary?
So I have very, very strong feelings about what our responsibility is to the community. And it really dates back to pre-COVID. And it dates back, as you have heard me say many, many times, a conversation I had with our principals from our elementary, middle school, and high schools, who pointed out that our students cannot read. That's elementary, middle school, and high school who say that this is a priority for them. So pre-COVID, we started a reading program where we used our Department of Education to train students in literacy to go out into the schools and teach. And they did a great job with about 100 students in three schools. That number is up to 5 schools and 500 students, and we just got a federal allocation to expand it, and we're adding math proficiency. And what I find so encouraging about this is that we're taking the intellectual capital that we generate as colleges, and we're taking that capital and we're investing that into our communities, and we're getting a return. And it says to us, yes, you need, and it's not, in the scheme of things, yes, it costs money, but it's not a lot of money. And what it is, it's a commitment, it's a moral and an intellectual commitment to what we as an educational institution can do for the education of the young people who are behind us. And so I just say that to say that with all of this, keeping that in mind, we have resources. We have great assets. Mm-hmm. We have medical, sociological, artistic resources that we can invest and reinvest. And that will attract more people to come and want to be a part of that.
And I will say, guys, the greatest assets that we have are our students.
Our students.
Yeah.
Our students can bridge so many gaps for us to how we connect with each other, to the community, to our faculty. And I love the conversations that we've had about self-empowerment, mental health and wellness. I love us talking about being this moral authority and speaking for ourselves instead of having people speak on our behalf, and opening up the eyes to a broader community to think about us when they're going to talk about Black men, or when they're going to talk about Blacks in higher ed.
Black women.
Or Black women. Hello, perhaps you should go to, if you're going to rob a bank, okay, you're not going to, if you want money, you rob the bank, you go to the bank, you don't go to the 7-Eleven if you really want some money. Okay, and sometimes people go to things like the 7-Eleven instead of going to the bank. And we're saying, go to the bank. So let me end, guys, with one opportunity for you to actually share with us something exciting that's going on in your campus that you want to invite others to learn more about. And Mary, I'm going to start with you. Because you had this recent wonderful groundbreaking opportunity. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that, please?
So I'm an arts person, I confess. I will start by telling you that on Sunday, all the arts faculty and students performed a celebration, and they started at my house at Reynolds with George and me. And then we crossed the campus over to Laura Spelman, and at each site, they told stories I had never heard about where the arts had begun and how they had developed. And they did spoken word, they did dance, there was a string ensemble, we had a cinematic presentation, we had a photographic exhibit. This lasted for 2 hours. This is all across. They were dazzling. I mean, they were absolutely dazzling. And I felt so good that we have broken ground on a building that will house them, that will not only house them for the benefit of Spelman campus, but it's our first public-facing building at Spelman outside of the gates.
It's not going to have a fence around it?
It'll have no fence around it.
Let's give ourselves a round of applause with no fence.
It'll have a front porch. And if you look at that banner in front of the college, it says, "Welcome to Spelman's New Front Porch.
Wonderful.
Because that's the idea now that we have for this college. And I say that, and we invite all the disciplines, because art and culture and imagination, being able to think about what's not there, to being able to see it and then make it happen, is just the essence of what the future is all about.
Okay, great. And what would the name of that new building happen to be? I'm sorry. What would the name of that building happen to be?
I'm very honored that the trustees have named it the Mary Schmidt Campbell Center for Innovation in the Arts.
Well deserved, well deserved. David, what's exciting happening in your campus that the world needs to know?
Gee, there's so many things. Mary started out by saying she's an art person. I'm a business person. I taught business school for 22 years. And one of the exciting things happening is actually a joint effort with Spelman. Mm-hmm. We've secured together close to $20 million and have launched the Center for Black Entrepreneurship. Not only will that center be the anchor for educational and co-curricular activities, but also we're building it in a way that the materials that get created will be available online, mm-hmm. open source, so that other historically Black colleges that may not have our resources, but that want a curriculum that is unique from other curriculums in entrepreneurship, because it will address the ways in which race matters
right.
in entrepreneurship and business, as well as the basic skill set that's needed to grow, to create and grow a business. There'll be an online education capacity so that we'll reach beyond the borders of our campuses. And to me, it's exciting because it's connected to what I see as, if you will, the last leg of the civil rights movement. You think about Dr. King, he was assassinated when he was talking about issues of economics. And economic equality. And we need to be unambivalent about wealth building in our community and unambivalent about saying to our students, you know, you need to think about how you build wealth, how you own your creations, whether it's, and one of the great things about this initiative is, at least at Morehouse College, we found that our non-business students are attracted to our co-curricular entrepreneurship activities more than our business students, right? But our students who do music and art, those are the folks out there creating apps and, you know, you'll see our poets getting with our computer scientist guys, and now they're over in the entrepreneurship, you know, center. So I'm excited about that.
And George?
So a couple of things. We want to make sure that our community mm-hmm. is supporting Jazz Under the Stars. Mm-hmm. It was an initiative that was started by First Lady Judge Brenda Cole some years ago to mm-hmm. help our students who just didn't have the funds to get across the finish line. So that's coming up out here on this beautiful quad at mm-hmm. Morehouse College and Clark Atlanta University. That's coming up Saturday. Mm-hmm. So we're looking forward to the for the community to come and celebrate with us. And then on the other side, we have a couple of announcements that are coming up. But let me also share that we have a commencement on May the 14th. Mm-hmm. And we have one of our distinguished alums, Pinky Cole, who is going to be the speaker. She's on the current issue cover of Essence Magazine.
Wonderful.
She's going to be working hand in hand with us on putting many of our students and prospective students into business as entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And that's about as much as I can say about it, right?
Okay, well, we will look forward to learning more. And I will just say at Morehouse School of Medicine, the biggest announcement we have continuing is our partnership with Common Spirit Health that will double our medical school class size, our PA student class size, our graduate students, where we will open up 5 regional medical campuses and 10 graduate medical education programs that will address the Black doctor shortage in this country. And you know that we will continue to look to you all and your students to help populate this graduate programs. And so again, colleagues, thank you so much for such a thoughtful conversation, because there are so much that we need to share. There's so much we need to share. As I think about in closing, guys, I end with these three points. In the midst of crisis, leaders step up, not back. I think that each of us have shown that we have to step up. Even if you're a little timid at first, we didn't have a choice. We had to step up and not back. And our students, I think, really are also learning what it means for them to have to step up to a future that is not always for sure. It's not always for sure. And we have to provide them with the resources that they need to be successful. The second thought is that in the midst of crisis, leaders respond and not react. And I have learned so much from each of you all by sometimes slowing down, inviting others to the table so that we can have meaningful, thoughtful deliberation, not just a reaction, but a response that can be sustainable and that can penetrate throughout our organization. And then the final thought is that in the midst of crisis, leaders look to learn, not just mitigate. And we did that, and we will continue to learn and learn from each other. Dr. Mary Smith Campbell, we will miss you. We have utilized you so much as our source of wisdom on this council. We are excited about your retirement, and you always should know that you have a seat at either one of our tables, and we will call upon you. So thank you.
Oh, thank you, Valerie. I appreciate that.
Thanks to each of you for joining me on this edition of the Danforth Dialogues. I am sure our listeners found what each of you had to say of value. Thanks to everyone for tuning in, and always, we wish you good health and great success in all that you do.
This has been a presentation of Danforth Dialogues with Morehouse School of Medicine President and CEO, Dr. Valerie Montgomery Rice. We hope you enjoyed the show. For more information, please contact us at danforthdialogues@msm.edu.